Hello all, welcome to the 60th episode of Audible Weed Walk. This is Nina. Today's episode is going to be a little different. It's not about greens, but wilds nevertheless. Wild things that is growing just around me and setting up a network of relations that ties me to everything, to nature. Listen on. Do you know what is termitomycosis? Well, not another new disease, no. Well, I found some not far away from my door as I walked outside. What is it? Well, that's the whole, content of the podcast. So you'll have to listen on. And I'm sure that you are guessing right now. Please do. As the word suggests, it has something to do with the termite. A difficult species, right? Despite being an ecologist, two sets of arthropods I have difficult relation with. One is cockroaches and the other termites. Must say, cockroaches I have more trouble with because they tend to come inside the human habitation and they fly. Termites fly also, but only seasonally. Though, of course, talking about cockroaches, there are forest cockroaches who kind of remain in the woods, though. I don't mind them. Termites are cousins of the cockroaches. They are more stealthy operators in some ways. One has to be alert not to offer them cozy home indoors. Otherwise, they'll surprise you with not so pleasant surprise. But otherwise, they are mostly happy outside, making their own mounds. But if you think this podcast is about termites, you'll be quite not correct. It is about wild, weedy food. So, where's the link? Well, some of you, of course, know that in some tribal and rural cultures, right around us and around this season, when the termite starts flying, they harvest them and they are eaten like snacks. The termites who are, they actually fried and eaten like snacks, and it's not too bad actually. The termites who take their wings eventually die or become food for birds, herbs, insects, and why not some humans too? I once watched a huge scorpio chomping upon them. Of course, a lovely time for frogs and geckos. But no, I'm not talking about termite as food. Let's take a step back and give you a bit of context. October is usually the beginning of the northeastern monsoon, or we call it returning monsoon. This is the primary monsoon season for this part of India, which is Tamil Nadu. But this year, while the onset of the northeastern monsoon has been delayed until later in the month, we are receiving some last-minute flashes from the southwestern monsoon system. It has been wet. Tamil Nadu, unlike other places in India, do not have a distinct no-eating-the-green season because rain traditionally in this part has been intermittent. A few days of rain, then long dry spell, rain again between end of September to mid-December. One would say maybe it's climate change because that pattern has been quite disrupted the last several years. Not complaining though, but we are getting more rains, more cloudy days. Hence, in my practice, I would avoid eating greens until we get a good dry spell for about at least 2 weeks or so. But what to do? Habit now. I still love to take a walk outside after the rain, after the slush has subsided a little and the mosquito bites are still tolerable. I take a walk to see which weedy greens are flourishing, and there are many. Still not eating though. In one of my walks recently, I saw them again. This tiny spray of white, tiny mushrooms. Beautiful looking. I know I've seen them around, and over the years I have noticed them in the wet seasons, just like now. This time I stopped to take a closer look. Who knows? In the next day, the sun may actually take it away, and there'll be nothing to find at the same spot. I studied carefully, picked and looked at the gill patterns, and made notes so that I can take advice from experts instead of taking the next obvious step, which is taking the spore print. But of course, the next day, as the day progressed, it was sunny and I lost them all. But not before knowing the fascinating tales that link the mushroom to me, and me to the soil, and to the termite, and to the forest, and the whole cycle of well-being and renewal that nature does. More I researched, more I was fascinated by them. They turn out to be Termitomyces. This one in particular is Termitomyces microcarpus. This ID was given to me by an expert, R. Govindaraj. And the research in Uganda and other African nations where it is widely consumed also has proven that it is high in antioxidant properties. Digging deeper, I found that there are 30 to 40 different species in the same genre, in the genera. And turned out, in the western part of the country, Western Ghats, which is typically more wet than us, it is quite common. In fact, it is quite a delicacy, seasonal delicacy in Goa that has increased in demand so much with the tourism that it is threatening the very species. There are lots of papers, lots of write-ups about actually how to save this species now. And we didn't even know about it. I read an article sent to me by Jashid Hamid. There, Dr. Nandakumar Kamat from Goa University, who has studied mushroom for more than 30 years, was interviewed. I got glued to the article. Turned out that Termitomyces mushroom are totally linked to the termites. The termites eat them to obtain enzyme and nitrogen, and in turn, their mounds nurture these mushrooms. So no termite, no mushroom. It seems Western Ghats have 35 species, and about 15 of them are endemic, and out of which 12 are harvested and brought for sale. So there are quite a few of these mushrooms. In Goa, termite hills are called roen. According to Dr. Kamath, each roen or termite hill recycles up to 500 kgs of organic matter from the forest each year. And the mineral and a nutrient-rich soil is returned to the forest soil pool. Amazing, isn't it? So you must be wondering, oh, please, do not get into termites. So, let's talk about the mushroom. But how? They are so interlinked. Dr. Kamath did a research and quantifies that Western Ghats has about 810 termite species per hectare. In mixed forest, like Western Ghats, where there is a lot of tree diversity, creating a mixed litter on the ground for the termites to decompose. It's quite a lovely habitat for them. So imagine 810 termite mounds per hectare, and each mound decomposing about 500 kgs of soil per year. So it's like a machine going on without us even knowing or spending a penny on them. So this is what forest does. This is what the efficacy that forest offers us. However, the termites invade trees also. Between 21 to 79% of the trees they invade. They transport the moist subsoil and construct cover tunnels, and slowly they plaster around the tree trunk. You must have seen this a lot around Oroville. You cannot miss it. There are tree trunks which is completely taken over by this termite plastering. If you really tap the plasters, you will find active running around termites underneath. So they do it slowly And what they do by plastering is that under the plaster, they chew up the soft bark and then transport, they mix it with the saliva and transport it underground, in which they actually nurture a fungus garden. Imagine, we think that we only have garden. They have fungus garden in their mound. So inside the termite hill, the nutrient end up in the fungus comb, which is their fungus garden. Each comb, this fungus grows. So our Termitomyces fungus actually grows in that cone and decomposes the nutrient-rich plant material that the termites sense. So it's a complete symbiosis. See? So they decompose about 167 to 341 kilogram. I mean, why 41? Why not 40 and 42? I have no idea. But this is the number I got. So it decomposes about 167 to 341 kilogram of organic matters annually. Can you believe that? This Termitomyces, tiny little white mushrooms that we almost ignore. This complicated and complex system apparently developed over 130 million year old. Though through that time, the mushrooms have been solid waste managers in the forests and grasslands. At some point, they have forged a close alliance and a relation of symbiosis with the termites, and in that way with us too. Except that it is not so obvious for us. And so we think termites as pests only. But hang on there. Before you get ready to grab the bowl full of this wild mushroom the next time you see them, do it with caution. If you remove them in the bud stage, the stage that it is sold in Goa seasonally, you have not allowed them to grow. You have not allowed them to come up for the next generation. So wait a bit, you know, let them actually open up. And so at that stage, it may not be the most desirable to eat, but they are still edible and will be still wonderful. And it's a treat. Eat with care. Like all the wild food, there is a problem with this species becoming a touristy favorite. People who have no knowledge about this mushroom, who have no idea how to harvest them and how much to harvest, actually becomes the consumers. So there are actually eateries which specializes in this mushroom food, and the suppliers are, of course, people who are finance strapped. So they may actually have a lot of knowledge about mushroom. They have access to it. But one of the argument is given that, they would definitely know, the tribal people will know, and so they will not never harvest more. That's not true. Why put the responsibility on somebody else when each of us can take the responsibility and say that maybe if I want to taste the mushroom, I would only do so once and not, every time, because this can get quite expensive. I saw a record that in the peak season, a kilo of mushroom can be anything between 1,500 to 15,000 rupees. So that's quite a bit. So there's a lot of demand. And as the demand goes, it takes the food away from the tribal people, who this antioxidant-rich food would have helped, because otherwise they're cash-strapped from getting good nutritious food. So it becomes a cash crop, while their own food system becomes nutritionally low. So like any wild food, wild honey, mahua oil, all these become a fad. And then we have to be a little conscious that as consumers, as people who are urbanites primarily and not staying in the area, what is our impact on these mushrooms? Dr. Kamath says that, the local people who actually harvest this mushroom can earn a lot more if they were trained how to farm, edible mushrooms that are, usually found in the market, the button mushrooms. And it's also written, kind of understood that this particular mushroom, it's not easy to grow, not easy to farm. But, researching in the site, I found that there are other countries who have tried growing, maybe not this particular species, but Tomatomyces. So why not have targeted research where this mushroom can be grown instead of harvesting them from the wild? All those are a lot of work, but imagine just a little white mushroom outside my door linked me to the Guan Zakuti, linked me to the entire forest, the soil, and the amazing work that is going on. This inconsequential looking thing, it's doing so much work to nourish and nurture each other and our ecosystem. So today, I especially acknowledge the well-being that they bring forward. And today is the day, as in my last podcast, I was telling that each day of invoking Shakti or the goddess Durga was to actually self-purify and self-nourish. And so on the last day, which is Dashera today, today is the day for feeling the well-being and also sharing the well-being with everybody. With that promise, we see that our little mushrooms and little termites are already doing. It's up to us to acknowledge and embrace that. With that thought, happy Vijayadashami. Stay well, stay safe, and I'll see you next time.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.